Hi, we're Josh
and Arielle Wamsley,
owners of Green Valley Tree LLC, based in North Windham.
We're proud to sponsor Connecticut East this week and to serve the communities of Windham and New London counties with our tree removal and plant healthcare services.
Visit our website at greenvalleytreeworks.com for a full list of our services or give us a call on 860-234-4041. We look forward to hearing from you.
COVID-19 cases are up across the state and in our nursing homes and long-term care facilities. We talk with AARP Connecticut about what needs to be done to help our vulnerable society of seniors who are being hit hardest by the pandemic. Plus, a look at other stories making the headlines from around the region. This is Connecticut East This Week. Hello, I'm Brian Scott Smith. Because of recent events involving COVID-19 in the state, we were going to bring you an interview with Greg Howard, the new state representative for the 43rd District, on his win during the recent elections. We will now bring you that interview in a couple of weeks' time instead. Now, if you live in a nursing home or long-term care facility in the state or have friends, family or relatives who do, you'll be all too aware of the restrictions that have been placed on these facilities, those who live there and for those wishing to visit. And with a recent uptick in COVID-19 cases across the state, once again our seniors have become a hot-button issue as they continue to be some of the hardest hit when it comes to COVID-19 deaths. Plus, a report about nursing homes and long-term care facilities compiled by Mathematica for the state concluded that Connecticut could have been better prepared for the situation. One national organization that advocates on behalf of seniors is AARP. And joining me on the podcast is Anna Dorigazi, Advocacy Director for AARP Connecticut, to talk about the ongoing situation facing our seniors in care facilities. Anna, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Now, AARP Connecticut, of course, a very well-respected, well-known advocacy organization for the older community. We're talking today specifically about COVID-19 and the situation with regards to nursing homes. What's AARP Connecticut's position on this? You know, how do you feel about what's happened in the state?
Sure. So I don't think we're alone in looking at the COVID-19 infection and death numbers in Connecticut and feeling just overwhelmed and appalled and believing that we should have done a lot better for our older residents, for people with disabilities who call nursing homes and assisted living facilities their home. I think because Connecticut was one of the states that was hit early on during the pandemic, we didn't have an understanding of how the virus was transmitted. You know, we didn't know in that sort of first critical month that we needed to be covering our faces, that we needed, you know, all of that PPE, that we needed the hand washing. And that was where we saw just tremendous loss in nursing facilities. I think since March and April, we have shown great improvement. I think we've applied some good lessons in those facilities. But we're still seeing outbreaks from place to place throughout the state. You know, if you look at the data, there are still nursing homes where you're seeing, you know, half of residents being infected. And, you know, 7 months in the pandemic, you know, that's really unacceptable and we need to be doing better.
The state, interestingly, ordered up a very expensive report from a New Jersey-based organization called Mathematica that does these types of reviews, and the state asked them to look at, you know, nursing homes, long-term care facilities. Those reports are now in. We've all had an opportunity to look and digest the content. There is a lot of content to go through, but some of the sort of findings that really stood out that Mathematica came up with was that the state really was found lacking when the outbreak happened, and obviously nursing homes in particular. Were you surprised to read some of those findings?
I wasn't too surprised by any of the findings, in part because some of the things that came up in the Mathematica report were things that advocates have been looking at and asking for years. In particular, I think Mathematica really honed in on the idea that staffing levels plays a very important role in the care that people receive and also in a nursing home's ability to stem COVID infections and deaths. So that was one of the pieces that, you know, in their final assessment, Mathematica said, you know, there are a lot of factors that went into how well or not well a facility did, you know, including things like community spreads, or if you were in a community that had, you know, a lot of COVID infections, it was more likely that those infections would find their way into a nursing home. But also in terms of, you know, what was under facilities control, facilities that had better staffing had better outcomes. And again, this is an issue that advocates have been looking at for years because, you know, COVID-19 is a particularly infectious, particularly deadly disease. But, you know, every year we have a flu season. Every year we have nursing home residents who, you know, are not receiving the time and care that they necessarily need in their facility. So no, the, you know, issues like that were not surprising. Something that was a little bit surprising to me was how much long-term care was not at the table in terms of emergency preparedness and planning. Mathematica really honed in on that as well and talked about how, you know, hospitals were really a main focus and very much at the table from the early days of the pandemic. And we didn't do as good of a job at including nursing facilities and home and community-based services. So I think there's a real opportunity there moving forward to make sure that, you know, anyone who is providing really critical services is at the table, you know, not just from day one of an emergency, but from, you know, the months and years leading up to day one of an emergency.
Yeah, I think what was interesting about that comment you've just made about the emergency preparedness is that the plan was actually sort of years out of date, and that they'd not actually done anything to bring it up to date, which was interesting. Another thing that I found interesting as well in their interim report is that they said that infection control staff at the beginning of the year were sort of like sorely lacking. The state did quickly sort of like get that amended, and I think it took them, you know, 3 or 4 months obviously to get those figures back up. But that in itself seems rather worrying, you know, COVID aside, that infections are going to happen in closed in spaces, and yet there didn't seem to be the amount of staff at the Department of Public Health to cover that.
Yeah, and it, you know, as I mentioned, COVID-19 is a particularly infectious and deadly disease, but it's not the only one. You know, there's a flu season every year. So, it, you know, I think that infection control piece is something that is going to need a lot of more, you know, a lot more conversation and a lot more attention moving forward. And I think there's also a conversation to be had around, you know, what are other options for people to receive care? If we look at a nursing home model, or if we look at other congregate care settings, and we can't think through ways to control infections, if we can't think through ways to adequately staff these facilities, then maybe we need to use our imaginations to imagine different models, or to look more toward home and community-based services as the model where we should be investing more time and attention moving forward.
Before we move on to that, because those are very important topics, and I do want to touch on those with you, I just wanted to like raise one more question with regards to the state. And I don't want to like put you sort of like on the spot, as it were, but I would just be interested in your thoughts on this as an organization. Of course, we only have an acting commissioner for the Department of Public Health. We did have a commissioner, and Governor Lamont removed her. We don't know why ultimately, and we may never know why. And of course, the acting commissioner is actually the commissioner of the Department of Social Services. Do you think that, you know, this sort of breakdown that sort of happened, and then this sort of knee-jerk reaction to get somebody put in place at DPH, possibly didn't help the situation either?
You know, I don't have any specific comment on those pieces. I don't have any special insights into, you know, what transpired at DPH or within the administration. So, you know, I'd hate to speculate, you know, on that point, since I don't have a lot of good information.
That's a fair comment. Let's turn to visitation, because obviously that's only recently sort of just had some slight amendments to it, so that, you know, relatives and friends can actually now finally have some better, still not great, but better visitation rights. What are your thoughts on, you know, what the state's come up with at the moment?
So there really has been a roller coaster when it's come to visitation in nursing homes. You know, one of the very first orders that we saw coming out of the Department of Public Health on March 13th completely eliminated visitation in nursing homes, except for, you know, some very sort of rare circumstances. And that restriction included, you know, privately hired aides who sort of supplemented care for folks in facilities, so that the long-term care ombudsman and her team were not able to go into facilities. So that had a big impact, because, you know, visitation is important to address people's mental and emotional health. But there was also a real practical impact that visitation ban had as well, that people who were in charge of, you know, looking out for abuse and neglect were no longer allowed into the facilities. Folks who were providing, you know, whether it was privately hired aides or whether it was family members, they weren't able to go into the facilities to provide really important care that people needed from them. So I think that, you know, that aspect of the visitation ban, you know, was really damaging for mental, emotional, physical health. But, you know, also at that stage of the pandemic, you know, I do want to give some credit to DPH and to the administration, who were facing a really unprecedented situation. You know, I don't think anybody on March 13th could have said, here's the perfect plan moving forward. I think that decision did ultimately save lives. But, you know, 7 months into it, we still have a situation where we're not back to regular visitation. We don't have, you know, those additional aides or family members back in the facilities providing care. So the situation that we have now, I noticed, I mentioned we've kind of been up and down with visitation. We had that complete visitation ban in March. In August, there was some expansion of visitation so that outdoor visits could happen. DPH started allowing for indoor visits for end of life and compassionate care situations. And then at the end of September, CMS, which is the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which regulate nursing homes, issued new guidance related to visitation. And DPH is deferring to that CMS guidance at this point. So there's more visitation indoor and outdoor allowed under those CMS guidelines, but still there are restrictions in terms of social distancing, in terms of wearing PPE. So the situation has improved, but still hasn't really addressed, you know, folks who were doing hands-on care in those facilities.
As we said, AARP is an advocacy organization. You know, what is it that you feel, what else needs to be done to try and address this very important issue of family and loved ones, etc., being able to visit, you know, their loved ones who are in either a nursing home or a long-term care facility?
I think what we need is a long-term care system that is going to be safe for folks, and that's going to allow them to not default into total isolation when there's a crisis. So I think we need to do whatever it takes to ensure that nursing homes and assisted living and other long-term care facilities have great infection control, so we can trust that, you know, even if an infectious disease enters one of these facilities, it's not going to be catastrophic the way that we've seen. I think we need to see more of an emphasis on serving people in home and community settings, so that, you know, instead of having 100 people in a facility where a disease can, you know, move through that population of 100, you're serving people in their homes, which, you know, incidentally is where most people, if they had a real choice, would choose to receive services. And I think, you know, that some of the things that came up in the Mathematica report include some workforce issues. So how do we make sure that we are, you know, cultivating a well-paid, well-trained workforce, so we don't have workers that need to work 2 and 3 jobs all at different facilities in order to make ends meet? So I think once we address some of these fundamental underlying issues, once we get that in order, then we can start talking about how we fix visitation. Because if those fundamentals aren't lined up, then visitation would continue to pose a risk. So I think, you know, it's hard to look at the visitation piece without also looking at some of these, you know, bigger issues overall.
The nursing home and long-term care, so like industry, is a billion-dollar industry. And so like over 30 years ago, back in like 86, a study conducted at the request of Congress, the Institute of Medicine found that residents in nursing homes were being abused, neglected, and given inadequate care. And then they came up with the Nursing Home Reform Act. Like I said, that's over 30 years ago. But 30 years on, we're now seeing, and I appreciate, you know, and we must keep stressing this, COVID-19 is an unprecedented situation. But that said, we are still seeing inadequate care. You know, we're talking about these issues in our nursing homes and long-term care facilities. Clearly, it seems that the Nursing Home Reform Act is not doing its job. And also, you know, where's the accountability and the oversight?
Right. And I do want to pause to make clear that, you know, I don't mean my comments to be disparaging of individual staff in nursing homes, or even of facility managers. My mother worked in a nursing home for years, and I know that these folks are turning up to work. They're risking their lives in a lot of cases, and doing their best to provide good care to folks. You know, but that said, this does bring me back to the question of, is this the best model? Is this how people want to receive care, you know, as they age or due to a disability? You know, can we create better systems in home and community settings? And, you know, Connecticut, to the state's credit, has really been moving to rebalance services in recent years, to take more people out of those congregate settings and either move them back into home and community-based settings or to keep them there to begin with. But I think we're going to need a lot more care and attention to those services, the nurses' aides and the other providers who can go into those homes, but also looking more holistically at what does it take for people to stay in the community as they age. Do we have adequate transportation? Do we have adequate ways for people to get to doctor's appointments? Do we have ways to keep them socially connected in the community? So it's hard to pinpoint one issue that I think is going to sort of solve all of our problems. But I think what COVID-19 has done is created an opportunity for all of us to talk about, first and foremost, how do people want to receive services as they age? You know, we always have to come back to that and center that. What do people want to see in their own lives and in the lives of their loved ones? And then, have that, if we don't have those bigger conversations about what kind of world could we create, we're just going to keep going back to putting patches on a system that is perhaps not working.
I was going to say, because I mean, we keep hearing this new normal, or people saying, well, when we get back to normal. But the reality is, not just for nursing homes, but for so many things that we're seeing, not only in this country, but across the world. But obviously, we're particularly looking at industries and whatever here in the United States, is that the normal just wasn't working.
Yeah. And, that phrase, new normal, or, this idea of going back to how things were before, it's such a big missed opportunity for us if we try to just go back, if we keep trying to claw our way back to, how we remember the world being in February of 2020. I'd love for us to all come together and imagine, what could a better world look like in February of 2021 and February of 2022. We have to be long-sighted on this, and we have to expand the conversation so it's not just, how do we prevent outbreaks of this particular virus in nursing facilities over the next 6 months? That's an important conversation. But that conversation has to happen in the bigger context of, as the population of Connecticut and the United States and the world ages in a way that's unprecedented, what kinds of great opportunities do we have to make sure that we are creating an environment where people have real choice in where they live and how they receive services, and making sure that people are part of that conversation, and that we're thinking holistically, and that we're thinking better.
The point I want to quickly make as well is, my understanding is that Medicaid and Medicare make up the bulk of income for sort of nursing homes here in the US. Also, a report that I read recently, or a survey, is that one in six Americans say that they actually want to, live in their homes rather than go to either a long-term care facility or a nursing home. So how do we deal with people wanting to have, home community-based services and take them out of, these traditional areas where we've put them?
Sure. So I think there are a lot of components there. you know, some of the survey work that AARP has done in the past shows, you know, around, I want to say it's 85% of folks, you know, want to receive care, you know, in their home and community as they age. So, you know, in terms of how we do that, I think we need to make investments in those services. We need to make sure that, you know, you had mentioned Medicaid as the primary payer of long-term services and supports. We need to make sure that, you know, Medicaid is correctly incentivizing where people want to live. You know, our home and community-based services getting the same, you know, getting adequate levels of reimbursement for the services that they're providing. You know, if not, what can we do to change that?
So, I mean, just summing this up then, Anna, and thanks ever so much for your time. I mean, it's a big, big issue. We're not going to solve this overnight. And anybody who thinks it's going to be solved overnight, clearly, you know, it just isn't. But what do you think are some of the primary things that we need to be looking at as we move forward, COVID-19 or not, when it comes to looking after, you know, our vulnerable and our older members of society?
I think first and foremost, we need to make sure that we are creating safe environments in nursing homes in this particular moment. So continued emphasis on testing, on PPE, on infection control. I think once we've nailed those down, we also have an immediate issue around visitation and making sure that people are able to see their loved ones and interact with them in meaningful ways. We need to focus on accountability. So what happens when nursing facilities are not keeping up with the guidelines around visitation, for example? What options do family members have when they're not able to schedule a visit with a loved one, or they show up for a visit and they're told that it was canceled? What can they do in those circumstances? How can we, you know, really hold facilities accountable to the rules that have been put in place? You know, on that accountability piece, there's also a standing executive order right now that grants nursing homes immunity from civil liability for anything that is COVID related. We need to take a good hard look at that executive order. And, you know, once we've taken that good hard look, I think we need to decide to get rid of it. So, you know, that's immediate. That's where we can start today. You know, as we look forward to the legislative session, I think that's where we can really start digging into some of these issues around how do we, you know, provide better staffing environments for long-term care facilities? How do we look at the staffing ratios? How do we look into supporting that workforce in, you know, in a more robust sort of a way? How do we start incentivizing people, you know, and payers to pay for those home and community-based services? How do we make those services available? How do we wrap around services like transportation, you know, meals, home health care, all of those things that make home and community-based services a real option? That felt like a really long list, but, you know, I think there are things that we can keep working on today and then things, you know, that need to be part of this much bigger conversation when the legislature comes back into session in January.
Anna Dorogazi, Advocacy Director for AARP Connecticut. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and thank you for illuminating us on the subject of nursing homes and long-term care. And clearly, as you say, this is a big battle. It's going to be a long battle to get this right so that we genuinely do make sure that we look after our vulnerable and our senior members of society going forward. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Since recording that interview with Anna, Connecticut has launched a nursing home and assisted living oversight working group, and their mission is to make recommendations on proposed legislation for the 2021 legislative session, addressing lessons learned from COVID-19. The group is made up of state senators and representatives, as well as members of various state agencies and private sector medical experts as well.
Green Valley Tree LLC is proud to sponsor Connecticut East This Week. Contact Green Valley Tree LLC for all your tree removal and plant health care needs and more. Find us at greenvalleytreeworks.com or call 860-234-4041.
Time now for a look at some of the other stories making the headlines in the region recently. In the Connecticut Examiner this week, the future of Connecticut farming. We started out as a dairy. We will always be a dairy, says Keys Orr, 27, who co-owns and operates Fort Hill Farms in Thompson, where she has 210 milking cows and just under 500 cows in total. Orr is a fourth-generation farmer, but before her parents fully bought the dairy from her grandparents, they bought land adjacent to the dairy farm and started a nursery. My mother does lavender. My mother does plants. She has over 72 gardens that you can walk through, and she's gotten into offering exercise classes and giving nature walks. Diversification is the buzzword for farmers, especially young farmers who must continually find new revenue streams to keep their farms afloat now and for the next generation. In the day this week, the State Department of Education began the process of revoking the teaching certificate of former Stonington High School teacher and coach Timothy Chokas in January after learning he was accused of sexually harassing female students. Chokas currently holds a valid teaching certificate that expires in June 2023. DOE spokesman Peter Yazbak said the revocation investigation is ongoing. After a female student accused Chokas of sexual harassment in January 2019, school officials allowed Chokas to resign with full pay and benefits through the end of the school year using accumulated sick time. They also agreed not to discuss his employment or resignation with anyone except as required by law. They never sought to revoke his teaching certificate despite complaints dating back to at least 2013 that he inappropriately touched female students and made sexually charged remarks to them, and a finding from the school system's Title IX coordinator that deemed his actions as sexual harassment. In the Norwich Bulletin this week, more demand for smaller turkeys. With the presence of COVID-19, many holidays like Thanksgiving are still happening, but just in a reduced way. According to Salem Prime Cuts in Salem and Knowles Market in Colchester, they're selling more smaller turkeys than they do in a normal year. However, both stores are still selling plenty of them. John Fasaro, the owner of Salem Prime Cuts, said they have sold more smaller birds as customers that usually buy 22-pound turkeys are opting for 15-pound ones. Fasaro said his Thanksgiving items are still selling well. Right now, sales seem about the same, but when the smoke clears, we'll know for sure, Fasaro said. Fasaro believes people are following the advice of medical professionals and are having smaller gatherings because of the virus. The U.S. Department of Agriculture reported last week that the market for frozen turkeys from 16 to 24 pounds is stable or stable with weak undertones. In the Middletown Press this week, the town of Portland has received nearly $307,000 from the state to help fight homelessness in both the town and the region. The funds were part of an overall $3.4 million state program intended to deal with homeless shelter improvements, homeless prevention services, and financial assistance for low-income residents at risk of becoming homeless, according to a statement released by Governor Lamont in announcing the grants. These grants will be used to ensure the supports are in place for those who are on the verge of becoming homeless, and we can rapidly respond to the situations they are facing, Lamont said. Portland is one of nine towns to receive the grants through a competitive process. Other towns include Groton, Guildford, Stonington, Torrington, and Westport. This funding increases the capacity to prevent, prepare, and respond to housing needs and pandemic precautions. And in the Chronicle this week, as the Covenant Soup Kitchen in Willimantic prepares for another season of providing meals to those in need, changes at the site have been made to ensure a safe and secure process for all. Executive Director Kimberly Clark said in October the organisation transformed St Paul's Episcopal Church at 220 Valley Street in Willimantic into a warming centre for guests without housing to get inside to keep warm and dry. Because of that, staff had to relocate daily meal services and the emergency food pantry. The emergency food pantry is now operating from the front of the kitchen's house next door. Clients can sign up at the bookcase on the covered porch, leave the order form in the basket, and pick up the order the next day. Extra food and other supplies will continue to be available at the meal service table and on the front porch of the house next door. And in next week's Connecticut East This Week, Dr. Anthony Fauci continues to be the voice of science on all matters of COVID-19, but he's also continued to be the face and voice of HIV/AIDS in this country as well. 2021 will represent the 40th year of the first diagnosis of HIV/AIDS in the USA, and I speak with Dr. Fauci about his involvement in this other pandemic over the last 40 years, his personal memories, people that have been lost, and his thoughts on those aging with HIV/AIDS. That's all from us for this edition. Do send us your questions and story ideas to the show via our website at connecticut-east.com or Facebook or Twitter at Connecticut East, where you can also listen to the show again on demand. And please like, follow and share on your social media platforms too. I'm Brian Scott Smith. Thank you for listening.